Abnormal Show Live is intended for responsible adults only. We advocate for the repeal of marijuana prohibition for adults. We discuss the science, culture, and controversy about America's marijuana laws. We do not advocate or encourage any illegal activity and advise all listeners to learn their state and federal marijuana laws by visiting normal.org, N-O-R-M-L.org. Opinions and claims made by guests and advertisers of Normal Show Live are their own and do not necessarily reflect the philosophy and policies of Normal. Listener discretion is advised.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
From the promise of legalization.
And I think we need to rethink and decriminalize our marijuana laws.
To the agony of prohibition.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
The National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws presents...
We love the Herb.
Normal Show Live, Marijuana Nation. Now, here's your host, Normal's Outreach Coordinator.
All right, good day, tokers and tokettes, and welcome. It is Wednesday, April 18th, 2012, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world, and it's our last day on the air before I head out to my whirlwind 420 season tour. 14 flights in 18 days. Oh, my God. Also joining us from our virtual studio in Grastoria, Oregon, is our senior news editor, Cannabis Carrie. Hi, Carrie.
Hi. Fun.
Yeah, totally fun.
All those peanuts you'll be eating in, out of the little bags.
And the little tiny pretzels with no salt on them. That's all right. They give you that little 4-ounce cup of soda to wash it down with, so it's all good, right? Carrie brings us our hemp headlines right after the first break. So what is in the news today?
We've got some big news stories to cover today. We're going to talk about Amsterdam today. You know, we've been covering how their laws are slowly changing. Well, now that the dates come, people have some things to say about it. Mm-hmm. Also, a huge Michigan ruling that we have to cover today. Not favorable for the cannabis community, but hopefully they'll continue this fight. And I don't know if you saw it on the cover today of the Huff Post. They had a huge legalization and war against pot from Obama on the front page. So we're going to talk about that article as well today on the Hemp Headlines.
All right. Yeah, it'll be good stuff to take a look at. And also the news, this news on the Oregon Ducks, we're going to get to that. We got a lot to say about that. Also joining us here in the studio, we've got Wiz Calico hanging out here on microphone number two. How you doing, Wiz?
Aloha. Doing quite well today. Glad to be here.
We got an Ivory Island Hour for tonight?
We do. It's going to be the last one for a couple weeks, so we might as well cram as much possible Ivory music into one segment as we can.
Give us some of the groups we'll hear tonight.
We're going to hear a little bit of Catch a Fire, a little bit of Slightly Stupid, a lot of the favorites from the Ivory Island Hours, as well as the Green, because we haven't heard from them in a couple weeks.
All right, on. So check that out tonight, 8 o'clock Pacific, 11 o'clock Eastern Time, Ivory Island Hour with Wiz Calico. Also, Brian Nared's hanging out in the studio. How are you, sir? Whoops. Gotta get your mic there.
I am here, Russ.
You are here, all present and accounted for. Also Love coming me. Up on today's show, we have got our cannabis science segment with Dr. Mitch Earlywine at 1:30. So if you got a question about cannabis science, history, culture, or health, we can ask Dr. Mitch about it, and he probably has the answer for us at the bottom of this hour, 4:30 Pacific, 7:30 Eastern Time. You can call in live at 971-533-7111, or just get into our chat room at live.normal.org and ask your question via text message. Then at the end of the show, time for a radical rant. Hey folks, get ready to be strip searched. Important new Supreme Court decision. We're going to talk about that and more on Normal Show Live. Stay tuned. We're back after this.
You're listening to Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Weedmaps.com. I'm Radical Russ from Normal. My job as outreach coordinator, I travel every month, and when I'm on the road, I need a fast, accurate way to find the medical marijuana dispensaries in the area. So I turn to weedmaps.com. Weedmaps.com has the best dispensary locator online or on your mobile device. Search by zip code or let Weedmaps find you, and in seconds you'll have the addresses, phone numbers, and customer service reviews for the medical marijuana dispensaries in the local area. Weedmaps.com also has a section devoted to helping you find a doctor who understands and recommends medical marijuana under your state's law. You can even check prices on the Medical Marijuana Stock Exchange. Coming soon, you'll even be able to find the listings of normal attorneys and chapters, local head shops and grow shops, and the best weed-friendly businesses. Weedmaps.com has the information you need to be an informed cannabis consumer. Visit Weedmaps.com today, a proud sponsor of the Normal Network. Inhaling deeply
all the sacred smoke. Hey, this is John Popper. You're listening to The Normal Show Live.
Hi, I'm Radical Russ. One of the best things about marijuana is the wonderful aroma. But when you travel a lot like I do, that aroma becomes a suspicious smell. That's why I endorse stealth-products.com, the leaders in smell-proof containers. From smell-proof vacuum bags to smell-proof backpacks and duffel bags, all the way to smell-proof digital safes, stealth-products.com has you covered. Stealth-products.com brings you safe, secure, odorless layers of protection with activated carbon fiber. Backpacks and duffel bags are simple black so as not to attract attention with a logo or a flashy design. Now, nothing is perfectly odor-controlled from the detection of drug dogs, but with proper vigilance, containers from stealth-products.com will help you avoid nosy humans.
You're now listening to Elliot Beats.
Stealth-products.com. Stealth-products.com.
Medical marijuana, industrial hemp, consumer cannabis. It's time for this week's Normal News with Cannabis Carrie.
The State Court of Appeals ruled today in what is becoming an important Michigan case. The DUI case of Rodney Kuhn has become a flashpoint for the medical cannabis community in Michigan. He was stopped in 2010 for exceeding the speed limit by almost 30 miles per hour. The medical marijuana patient admitted to police that he had smoked marijuana about 6 hours earlier. They took a blood test from Mr. Kuhn that revealed marijuana was in his system, and he was charged with driving under the influence because Michigan has a zero tolerance for drug-impaired drivers. The law, the zero tolerance law, which took effect October 1st of 2003, contains a zero tolerance for drivers with certain illegal drugs in their system, specifically Schedule I drugs, those with no medicinal use such as marijuana, GHB, cocaine, and cocaine derivative drugs. Under that law, prosecutors do not have to prove that the driver was impaired, just that they were driving with those drugs in their system. Now, two separate lower courts had dismissed the charge against the legal medical marijuana patient, Rodney Kuhn, citing the Michigan medical marijuana law. But Grand Traverse County has pressed on, and today a three-judge panel state appeals court sided with the county prosecutor in northern Michigan. They will now be allowed to restore a criminal case against Mr. Kuhn for driving under the influence. The written ruling said that the medical marijuana law doesn't permit all types of medical use of marijuana under all circumstances, since driving is a particularly dangerous activity and any Schedule I substance is considered particularly inimical to drivers' ability to remain in a maximally safe control of their vehicle. Now, the danger of failing to do so affects not only the driver, but anyone else in the vicinity. So in that ruling, they ruled that there is nothing in the 2008 Michigan medical marijuana law that gives immunity to the more than 130,000 people in the state of Michigan who are currently enrolled in the medical marijuana program. In Kuhn's case, his lawyer was arguing that drivers who use medical marijuana should be treated like other people who are legally consuming prescription drugs. Now, no word today from Kuhn's lawyers after the ruling was released, but if they want to appeal, the state Supreme Court would be the next step.
All right, let's clear up a few things here, Carrie. Maybe you can answer some questions. As far as I'm aware, Michigan's Supreme Court determined that metabolites were not a Schedule I substance, and so that they couldn't bust someone on metabolites. So is it clear in these stories that when they say they found marijuana in a system, they're talking about active THC?
I think it is, Russ. They took a blood test after he was pulled over. He agreed to a blood test, so it wasn't just like a urine test. But it didn't say the word metabolites. But then again, you know, a lot of the people, especially the reporters, are pretty uneducated, so they don't ask those kind of questions.
Was there any indication in the lower court rulings from these reports that explained what part of the Michigan Medical Marijuana Act they were citing or how they were coming to their original dropping of those charges?
You know, I just think it was because he admitted to doing it 6 hours before, mm-hmm. and they ruled that whatever his blood content was pretty close to that, so that he wasn't impaired at the time, saying he could have blood, you know, in his system since he was a Michigan medical marijuana patient.
Right, right. Okay, well, you know, given those facts, or just given what we know about this case, let me just say a few things about it. Obviously, we all know that someone who smoked marijuana 6 hours beforehand is in no way impaired to drive a vehicle, any more so than anyone who's taken OxyContin 6 hours beforehand is too impaired to drive a vehicle. I can show you pill bottle after pill bottle of oxycodone and hydrocodone and other products that say, until you know how this may affect you, do not drive or operate heavy machinery. Now, once you do know how it will affect you, you know, go right ahead and get behind the wheel, I suppose. So let's just get that part out of the way right away. I do not believe this guy was impaired in any way, or should he be prosecuted in any way. But looking at the legal side of things and how this court, appeals court, has ruled, given that Michigan has a zero tolerance law for active THC in the blood, that per se has nothing to do with whether or not how long ago it was or how much it was. They can still prosecute on that. And that just goes to show how medical marijuana laws are not going to protect you enough. We have to go farther than that. We have to legalize marijuana, and we have to make sure that once it's legal, we then go through the scientific rigors and the studies necessary to prove what we all know, and that is that having marijuana in your system is not in any way indicative of whether or not you are too impaired to drive. The U.S. Department of Transportation says so. They say trying to come up with some sort of per se standard for THC or metabolites is extremely problematic because of the different excretion ratios that we have, the different ways our bodies work as far as getting rid of THC. It's not always a linear fashion. It doesn't absolutely indicate that someone is impaired. Now, the other part of this story, though, that I have to comment on, 30 miles an hour over the speed limit. Really? 30 miles an hour over the speed limit. You know, I don't want anyone who's unimpaired or anyone who's innocent to go to jail. I never want to see anyone do time for marijuana. But if you're driving 30 miles an hour over the speed limit, you're endangering me and other people on the road, impaired or not impaired. So I'd like to see the guy, you know, this charge be something like reckless driving or speeding, extra speeding level, whatever it might be. But I don't think driving under the influence of drugs is the proper charge here, or impairment.
The Dutch coffee shop owners have been trying to fight a new rule put in place by the recent conservative administration that would ban selling cannabis to tourists. The largest change in decades to the country's famous soft drug tolerance laws would make it so that coffee houses where someone can buy hash as easily as a beer or an espresso would become a members-only business. The coffee shops would be required to make Dutch residency a requirement for membership, and any given coffee shop could only have 2,000 members per shop at any given time. The move is being pushed by the government, they say, with pressure from surrounding countries to stop drug tourists from coming to the Netherlands, buying hash, and then taking it home and selling it in countries where it remains an illegal substance, specifically Germany and Belgium, that share a border in the south and southeast parts of the country. The new rule would go into effect on May 1st in the southern parts of the country and nationwide on January 1st of next year. The coffee shops in Amsterdam would be affected by the January 2013 date, and that city is known for its coffee shops, where tourists can come and get a taste of life in a society that doesn't demonize cannabis use, and they have strongly opposed the move. The National Tourism Board has estimated that almost a third of foreign visitors to the city of Amsterdam, that is also known for the Van Gogh Museum, the Anne Frank House, and the Rembrandt Museum, along with dozens of other famous attractions, they make at least one stop in an Amsterdam coffee shop. That's about a third. Amsterdam's mayor, Ebert van der Laan, has been trying to negotiate a workable compromise with the city's justice to protect the cannabis coffee shops that have become an institution in the progressive city. Mayor van der Laan says the Dutch capital doesn't suffer major problems from pot smokers, and it doesn't make any sense to apply the same policy developed for the border cities. A group of Dutch coffee shop owners are also trying in court to block that move, and in court today, their lawyers got to begin their argument in the case. Lawyers representing the cafe owners argued in court that the move to stop people from buying marijuana in the Netherlands and reselling it in surrounding countries is clearly discriminatory. One of the lawyers said in court today that the drug policy of the Dutch gives the citizens a, quote, fundamental right to the stimulant of their choosing, unquote, and that the country should not deny visiting foreigners that same right. The Amsterdam coffee shop owners say that the cabinet is just taking a swing at ending their businesses, since the problem is reportedly just on that southern border. The policy should not be enacted nationwide. But lawyers for the government disagree, saying that the fighting drug tourism and criminality is a justifiable reason for a nationwide crackdown. And they say that the coffee shops were originally intended just to be small local shops selling to local people. Now, after hearing from both sides, the judge will issue a written answer. Now, one city in the south that will be expected to implement the new rule on May 1st is Maastricht City, and their coffee shops plan to disregard the ruling, forcing the government to prosecute at least one of them in a test case. Now, though the weed pass policy is what they're calling it, was designed to resolve traffic problems in the South City there, later studies have predicted that the result of the system would be a return to street dealing and an increase in petty crime, which was the reason for the tolerance policy in the late 70s. So we will keep you posted on this. A lot of movement and a lot of activists getting really active right now, Russ.
Yeah, it's weird, the politics and the things that happen on borders. And because of one side of the border, they have a certain morality. The other side of the border, they don't. I mean, Carrie and I can remember many a time that we would take a whole bunch of our money that we earned in the state of Idaho, and we would drive it south to Jackpot, Nevada, a desolate, bleak place where no human being should ever want to be, except for the fact it's on the border of Idaho and Nevada. And there's casinos there in Nevada, and you can gamble and have a lot of fun and see a show and so forth. And I just think when it comes to these border issues, you know, when we're talking about drugs or prostitution or gambling, that it's just inevitable that one place that has it is going to attract the people from the place that does not have it. It's going to attract their money. It's going to attract their attention, their tourism. It's all that kind of stuff. So obviously the best possible solution would be for the other countries in Europe to just relax their marijuana policies as well. Make Amsterdam no big deal, because you could go get weed in Berlin at a coffee shop in Paris or someplace, in Belfast, whatever it might be. But of course, that's not going to happen immediately. So there's going to continue to be these border problems and these attempts to restrict the rights of the Dutch citizens, even, because it's going to make it tougher on the Dutch citizens in order to police the citizens from outside their country. It's amazing the lengths that countries have to go to appease their neighboring countries' inability to deal with adults and drugs.
And today, the headliner on the front page of the Huff Post, with the bold headline, Obama's War on Pot, this increasingly mainstream cover issue had a picture of President Obama with a large pot leaf. But the story didn't focus as much on President Obama's policies that have allowed a recent crackdown on marijuana-related businesses in California and other medical marijuana states, but a focus on Richard Lee, the founder and now ex-operator of Oaksterdam University, who was subject to a raid that we streamed live on our network. Lucia Graves, the HuffPost writer, called it the highest profile move in the Obama administration's nationwide assault on medical marijuana. Richard has not yet been arrested, but computers, files, plants, books, and pretty much everything but the office furniture was seized by DEA and IRS agents. Now, Lee spoke out against President Obama, who promised not to waste federal resources on medical marijuana. Lee said it's been about a year and a half that the administration seemed to change their minds and start an attack on many medical marijuana states and threatening governors to not sign medical marijuana legislation. According to Dale Sky Jones, Oaksterdam has graduated about 15,000 students since its 2007 opening. Richard Lee may have been targeted after spending his profits from running his university to fund Proposition 19 in California. Now, with the raids and the charges from trafficking to money laundering, Lee's hands are surely tied this election cycle. Federal authorities were flanked with those IRS agents. This is a similar tactic that they used against Oakland's other giant medical marijuana institution, the Harborside Health Center. The government is demanding $2.4 million in taxes in an attempt to close them, according to Steve D'Angelo, who said it wasn't an attempt to tax them, but an attempt to tax them out of existence. Now, in what the HuffPost is calling the first exclusive interview with Lee since the federal raids earlier this month, he said there can be no more taxation without legalization, a sentiment he expressed on April 5th, the day after the raid, when he came on our show for an interview.
Yeah, that kind of, I mean, I saw that big, bold, 82 font HuffPost headline there, and I'm like, oh, great, and I click on the story, and like the first or second paragraph thing in there, in this exclusive interview with Huffington Post, the first since the raids, I'm like, huh? Oh, Floyd, I seem to recall talking to the guy like 2 days after the raids. Maybe I was high at the time, but I think that was the first exclusive interview, you know, just to toot our own horn here. But all right.
And just to clarify, Russ, you were high at the time.
I was high at the time. Okay. Yeah. Whew. Oh, that's making a whole lot more sense. All right. You can check out our interview with Richard Lee at our YouTube channel, youtube.com/normalnet. If you just type Richard Lee in the search, you'll be able to find it. And it's about the 45-minute mark.
Well, looks like we should prepare for our 45-minute mark.
I think so.
Make sure that we're high enough for that.
What do we got today?
And a little bit of Jack Harris, too.
All right. Well, back after this.
It's 20 after the hour, and we have to take a short break, if you know what I mean. Please support these sponsors who support Normal Show Live.
Oh, have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. Have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. If he said he swam to China, he would sell you South Carolina. Then you know you're talking to that reefer man.
The law offices of Omar Figueroa would like to remind you to stand up for your rights. Please do not give up your precious liberties. There's nothing wrong with standing up for our constitutional rights, and in fact, it's the only way to honor the Constitution that recognizes our natural rights. Treat law enforcement with respect and respect the Constitution by standing up for your rights. If you are detained or arrested, stand up for your rights by repeating, "I respectfully invoke all my legal and constitutional rights. I do not consent to any search and seizure. I want to remain silent, and I want to speak to my attorney, Omar Figueroa." Omar Figueroa has more than a decade of experience in federal and California courts and graduated from Yale University, Stanford Law School, and Trial Lawyers College. Please contact the law offices of Omar Figueroa at 415-489-0420 or 707-829-0215. Or on the web at www.omarfigueroa.com.
Hey, this is Willie Nelson for Normal. And I smoke pot and I like it a lot. I learned a long time ago that marijuana is a lot safer than alcohol. There's nothing wrong with the responsible use of marijuana by adults. It's time we stopped arresting and started respecting those who smoke marijuana responsibly. To learn what you can do to help, contact Normal at NORML.org or call toll-free 888-67-NORMAL.
It's time for your daily Toker Tunes, the best in 420-friendly music from all genres that uplifts, entertains, and informs the public. Today we get tunes for Irie Wednesday, our celebration of that mellow vibe we find in the best of reggae, ska, calypso, and Latin music. If you'd like to submit your song to be played on Normal Show Live, send it to us at stash@normal.org. Now here's some more great independent marijuana music for today's Daily Toker Tune.
All right, welcome back, everybody. It just came to me here as I was listening to the intro how we always say it's a 420 tune, but by the time we get to it, it's 423. But then I realized that's not a big deal, Coleco, because it gives us the time to actually sift and sort and grind and roll and load.
For sure. So we got to get prepared.
I figure by 3 minutes in, everybody's got it. They're ready to go. They're ready to listen.
Absolutely.
All right. So this would be perfect time to bring on our Irie Wednesday music editor, Kyle, a.k.a. NorCal Perps. How you doing?
Not too bad. How you doing today, Russ?
Oh, my goodness. I am just overworked. But I got a four-leaf clover today.
Brian, got that going for you. Yeah,
got that going for me. Brian brought it in, so got a four-leaf clover. So I'm feeling lucky, getting ready for a long series of, I counted it up, it's 14 flights in 18 days in 3 time zones for 4 events.
It's a movie.
Yeah,
we're going to turn it into a movie.
We're going to turn it into a movie. I have a crew with me. Hey, so how are things going down there in the Bay Area? Any big events we need to know about? What you doing for 420?
Well, I believe I will be hanging out with our good friend Rolla J.
All right.
We got together yesterday, had a little meeting of the minds, getting our little hash dash together and whatnot.
All right, cool. Well, we're gonna do a show on 420. I'm in San Antonio, but I'm gonna start at about 4 o'clock Eastern time, which is like 1 o'clock Pacific. And I'm going to just be on live and talk and maybe play some music. But also, I'm going to call out to the time zones. When it's 4:20 in that time zone, I'm going to call out to people. Like, so the first 4:20, you know, at 1:20 Pacific, I'm going to call all my East Coast friends and so on. So I was hoping I could get a hold of you and Rolla J for the 4:20 in the Pacific time zone to represent Northern California.
Definitely. I do have my tablet, so I will have Wi-Fi wherever we are. The one thing is we may be on Hippie Hill, which will be just completely packed. It's Golden Gate Park, so it's elbow to elbow with people.
That'll be a perfect.
Yeah, we can definitely try and check in there.
That's going to be a perfect 420 report. Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. Anybody else who's listening on the Normal Network, especially Lively Libra, anybody who's got a show on the network, yes, you're all invited to participate in our 420 special. We're going to be talking to people all around the country. Each time zone where it hits 4:20. So 4:20 Eastern, we'll talk to our friends in Georgia and in New York City and Philly, if I can get a hold of them, New Jersey and so forth. Then we'll hit Florida, too. We got some Florida pals. Then in Central time zone, of course, I'll be in San Antonio with Chief Greenbud and some others and the folks from San Antonio Normal. We'll call out to Dallas-Fort Worth. We'll call out to Austin. We'll call out to Iowa. We'll call out to, well, we got some Kansas City people, some Missouri people. It's going to be a good time. Then when we hit the mountain time zone, of course, we're going to get in touch with Ganja John, who's going to be in Denver at one of the big parties. He doesn't know which one yet. I guess they got one for TH Seeds. They got one for other groups. I mean, there's a ton of them. So we'll look at that. Call my friends in Boise. And then, of course, we hit the 4:20 in the Pacific. We'll call Rolla J. We'll call Terry Joyce in Southern California. We'll get a hold of Carrie in Astoria. See if I can find someone in Seattle. And where's my Hawaii peeps? Got to get some Hawaii. Got to get some Hawaii call-ins on this as well. So check it out on 420. We'll be live all day as long as I can keep the stream going. All right. So there's the intro of that. Let's get back to the music with Kyle here, NorCal Perps. What do we got today?
Well, today, Russ, we've got an up-and-coming group from New Zealand, DSS, or Da Soul Sound. They were just formed in 2010, but they had a member break off. But they're still working on their first album. Should be coming out soon. I hear they're going to be having a new single or two this summer, too. So look out for that. Check them out on Facebook or YouTube. And I just wanted to play a special song for all the growers out there.
All right.
You know, every bowl that we pack, it comes from a person who has a big passion for growing this plant. And just everyone remember that every time when you go to light up this next bowl.
All right. This is DSS with Ganja Farmer. Thanks, Kyle. Talk to you next week.
I'm a ganja plant side. Call me the ganja farmer. Keep down in the earth with the booty ganja. Babylon come and light it up on a fire. Big stinking helicopter float through the air. But them call it, they call it weed eater. Them never did them when we was taught in water. But when we did apply that fertilizer, yeah, out to the skies and we spit in fire. And I'm a little human with that hot tank. I'm a stinking rocket launcher, and a nasty pen in the helicopter. Me a Johnny, yes, I'm a ganja planter. What? Call me the ganja farmer. Deep down in the earth where they put the ganja. Babylon, come and light it up on a fire, me charm. Yes, I'm a ganja planter. Call me the ganja farmer. Deep down in the earth where they put the ganja. Babylon, come and light it up on a fire.
And I miss that ganja, 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 ganja. Even I want to call it, I call it Saint Samaria. Even I want to call it, I call it marijuana. Even I want to call it, I call it the Hindi. Cause me like my ganja with the size of paper. Lord, listen, we love me ganja, say.
Yes, I'm a ganja plant, son. What? Call me the ganja farmer. Down to the earth where they put the ganja. Babylon, come and light it up on a fire, me charm. Yes, I'm a ganja planter. Call me the ganja farmer. Deep down to the earth where they put the ganja. Babylon, come and light it up on a fire, me charm. Yeah.
On the Venice Boardwalk, a club where members can, with a doctor's okay, buy medical marijuana.
Sean Kirsten, Hugh Hefner.
Yeah. It was like a slap in their face.
Break. Stomp.
We want to go through all the steps and show you how intense it is to own a dispensary.
Can you videotape that?
There were doctors' wards in Venice Beach. It got nasty.
Well, the bigger it got, I guess, the more risky it got.
No, my picture's right here.
Look at you, kid. You're on the taper. The
LA Times front page.
Sean's a visionary, and he's a little ahead of himself, but, you know, so is I.
Cash Bar TV, the ultimate Cheech and Chong joint.
Pretty soon, those doctor's offices were just sprouting up, too, all along the boardwalk.
You're listening to Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation. Compared to a planet, you're all just a bunch of specks. But we love you all anyway. Mumum.
There's this tremendous mass of waves all over in Spain.
Catch Normal News with Cannabis Carry every weekday on Normal Show Live at 7 p.m. Eastern here on the Normal Network. It's time for Normal Show Live's Cannabis Science with Dr. Mitch Earlywine. Dr. Earlywine is a professor of psychology at the State University of New York in Albany and the author of Understanding Marijuana. Now here's your dose of Cannabis Science.
All right, folks, we're going to take your calls for Dr. Mitch Earlywine here at 971-533-7111, or you can join us in the chat room at live.normal.org. We'll get your questions that way. Dr. Mitch, how you doing today? How you doing today, Dr. Mitch?
Having a great day.
Sorry about that. I had the mute button on. Glad to have you here. And one of the things I wanted to start with here, of course, we always like to open up with your take on the latest news in science or polling or statistics on marijuana. So are there any new studies we need to be caught up on?
In fact, some new data out of China suggests that acupuncture's effects on inflammation, which are usually pretty good, seem to rely on the good old CB2 receptor.
Really?
So as much as we don't know a ton about that one, its involvement in immune function more generally and inflammation, it looks like that's pretty much how acupuncture works.
It's activating the CB2, or what's going on?
Exactly. It's downstream, but basically the things that cause the inflammation rely on this CB2 receptor to essentially decrease their intensity. And it's neat because they block that CB2 receptor and suddenly it's just not working right.
Huh. That's really interesting. All right. Well, I wanted to get your opinion on a cultural phenomenon. Of course, 420 is this Friday, and you are a college professor and you're on college campuses dealing with college students all the time. And of course, CU Boulder, Colorado University at Boulder, has probably the world's biggest 420 smokeout, where the college quad is just packed with tens of thousands of people and a huge haze of smoke. It's not organized by anyone. People just show up there and they smoke weed and they leave. And in response to that, CU Boulder has now said they're going to ban visitors from campus and ticket people for marijuana and just really coming down hard on this. So I was just wondering if you've been following that and what your thoughts were.
I have been following that, and I'm a little bit confused. It seems like we all had a right to peaceable assembly at one time in this country. And if we are going to start handing out tickets for public use of cannabis, I'm not sure that Colorado is the place where you can really enforce that. I really feel sorry for anybody working in the court system there if they're going to have to process all of this. And I understand CU might, be apprehensive about this reputation or concern about negative consequences, but how awful are the negative consequences going to be? I think they should just all go and sell Twinkies as a fundraiser.
There we go. Yeah, I just don't see it working, actually. I don't see it actually having any effect on these folks. It's almost as if the more they try to repress it, the more people are going to want to do it.
Well, and in fact, it's got more national press this year than any other year.
Exactly. All right. Well, we'll bring some news coverage of that next week when we see what happened. We got some questions coming in from the chat room. I'll start with this one. Could you describe the anti-inflammatory effect from cannabis, as in what's going on at the cellular level for cannabis to have an anti-inflammatory effect?
Well, it's interesting. It depends a little bit on location. Where is the inflammation? But generally, it does look a lot like what I just described for these data related to the good old acupuncture. Cytokines, prostaglandins, various interleukin, various forms of immune cells get activated in response to any kind of crushing or pressure or things like that that might burst a cell and create inflammation in the first place. And these CB2 receptors are essentially involved indirectly in the response to then decrease that so that there's less fluid that's going to go to those sites and less of the little, silent screams, if you will, that are emitted by those cells so that inflammation may last a little while, but it won't last as long.
Okay. And with respect to cannabis medicine and that, I've been seeing a lot lately of people juicing cannabis, getting the leaves and just juicing it and getting a lot of CBD response out of that. Can you tell us more about juicing cannabis?
So this is relatively new, and so it seems to be trendy, but not particularly well based in empiricism, if you will. So ideally, if you were going to ingest cannabis orally, you'd want it to be decarboxylated. We've talked about this before about folks who make edibles and they put them in the oven. They put often the cannabis in the oven briefly before they make a butter or something along those lines to essentially make it so that this is going to be easier for the gastrointestinal tract to absorb and for it to have its bigger impact and longer duration because of the way the liver breaks it down and things along those lines. Juiced cannabis, I mean, unless they're heating it up before they're juicing it, may not have this advantage. Obviously, juicing any kind of greens is going to have the potential to have some nice impact on your health just via other nutrients that are in greens more directly. Mm-hmm. You're certainly going to get a psychoactive effect if the dosage is high enough, but it may not be as dramatic as one you might get from edibles. And we just don't have a ton of data long-term what this does, but the potential for an antioxidant effect like we see in, say, curry powder or, other edible-type spices that also seem to function comparably is certainly there. It's unfortunate that we don't have, ongoing studies trying to get a feel for this.
So you kind of, on the side of that, mentioned nutrients or whatever. If someone was going to put together a salad and throw some cannabis leaves in it, what kind of nutrients might they be getting?
Well, so it's neat because basically all the green leafy vegetables are pretty good for vitamin E, some of the micronutrients that we often don't get in, say, folks who eat a lot of processed food. So some of the minerals, depending on where it was grown, and some of the B vitamins that are often present in, say, the nice green leafy lettuces and spinach and things like that. And that's going to be true even of these crazy, silly weeds just sort of growing in your backyard, although they're markedly less palatable. But I think the big opportunity is to take advantage of the antioxidant effects of the cannabinoids, and that's certainly going to be novel to these and, a few other plants, certainly not cannabinoids, but, other antioxidants and just a few handful of spices and things like that.
All right. Well, of course, many people are doing this in search of the CBD, the other cannabinoid that people are becoming more familiar with. And we have a question from the chat room asking your opinion on the treatment of autism with CBD.
So we do have some impressive case studies on basically, edibles in autistic children, and it's not crystal clear if CBD is the lone source, but having the CBD present tends to decrease some of the potential negative consequences of taking THC alone. So, I mean, as we know from folks who've endured Marinol, THC by itself can be pretty discombobulating, but with CBD in there, it tends to take that sort of magical ideation, crazy thought process away and keep the pleasant, somatic, and calming, relaxing effects present. And so I think CBD may have potential to, you know, be the big mechanism in autism, but we don't really have the strains analyzed that have been successful with these autistic kids, and that kind of that kind of analysis would be expensive but incredibly informative.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, we're speaking with Dr. Mitch Erlingwine and taking your calls at 971-533-7111. We got another question from our chat room that asks, what are some of the effects of smoking marijuana that has powdery mildew on it?
Alas, the biggest concern is exposure to one of the molds that creates a number of really nasty lung symptoms, coughing, wheezing, blood in the sputum that you cough up. It's really a terrible, terrible idea. And, I mean, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure on this. By all means, you know, drying your cannabis, making sure it's completely dried before you're throwing it in baggies, making sure your baggies aren't wet. I know a lot of folks are like, oh, and I put a little apple core in there to make sure it stays moist. Like, no, we don't want to do that kind of thing. And once you can see a white powdery thing, I'm sorry. I know a lot of folks say, well, just put it in the oven or, you know, just try this. But it's just not a risk you want to take. There's too much weed to be smoked in the world to smoke any that's bad.
There you go. And with respect to other crop infestations, a lot of people here in the Pacific Northwest worry about the blight of spider mites. What if you've got a bud that's got some webs on it?
Alas, I mean, we don't have a ton of data on what that would actually create, but I really feel like this is one of those better safe than sorries. Mm-hmm. I know it's always hard to throw away weed, but again, the world is full of good plants all around. There's no need to get attached to any single one.
Yeah, good point. All right, let's go to our next question. This question is about the butane hash oil, and what we're the question here is about if it's not been purged properly, is there a chance of getting some sort of chemical burn? And let's just start with that part.
Yeah, and sad but true, there is. If it's really been poorly purged, you'll actually, when you light it, be in danger of burning yourself, of a fire. I mean, so it can be really dramatic. But even without that, there's often you get this oddball, that gaseous or acetone-type smell, and you realize, oh, my God, I'm inhaling hydrocarbons. This cannot be a good idea.
Mm-hmm. Now, let's presume that someone has purged it properly and you've got very clean hash oil. Is the smoke from hash oil in any way more harmful or different than the smoke from cannabis in any way?
So theoretically, there would be the chance for fewer exposure, you know, less exposure to lung irritants because you're going to be smoking less total. Few people will, you know, will sit down and smoke a whole gram of hash oil when lots of folks would, you know, sit down and smoke a whole gram of cannabis.
Sure.
But we don't have any data actually in controlled laboratory studies to show that that's the case.
All right. And we've got another couple of questions here, but I want to give people a little heads up that if you don't get your question on today's show, you can always send an email to 420research@gmail.com. That's 420research@gmail.com. And Dr. Mitch will answer you or send you the right way to find out the answer or even bring it up on the show sometime. So get that email to 420research@gmail.com. Or join us every Wednesday here on the show where we do this segment with Dr. Mitch Erlingwine, taking your live calls here at 971-533-7111. Although, Dr. Mitch, I do have to make a program note that next week, next Wednesday, I'll be at the Patients Out of Time conference in Tucson. So we'll be doing a special there, and I'll have other doctors I'll have to speak to.
I think that's delightful. I'm actually looking forward to hearing it.
I feel bad. I feel like I'm cheating.
Don't worry. We have an open relationship.
Oh, good. Okay. I'm allowed to see other doctors. That's good. All right. One last question. Wow. This is a perfect segue. What research is available with cannabis and sexuality, specifically POTS effect on orgasm?
So Halikas, H-A-L-I-K-A-S, is probably one of the last people to publish in that area. And it's curious because it goes all the way back to the 80s. But in part, I think more research hasn't been funded because the effects are relatively obvious. So we do get self-reports of enhanced orgasm in both men and women. A lot of folks suggest it may have something to do with our distorted perception of time right after use of cannabis. The things that also seem to show up are just making sure you understand that the plant is not a lubricant.
Okay, I guess we'll have to leave it at that. And Dr. Mitch, thanks for joining us here on Normal Show Live. We'll talk to you in a couple of weeks.
Looking forward to it. Take care.
All right. And when we come back, we'll have a little time for a radical rant. And gentlemen, I think maybe we should fund some more research in this area. We'll be right back after this.
You're listening to Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Ever wonder how often to change your bong water? The most effective method for making pot brownies? The best destinations for a ganja getaway? How to hide herb in your car? Whether to grow your own? How precisely to legalize it? Or how something as wonderful as marijuana ever got to be illegal in the first place? Finally, you can find all these answers and much more in the official High Times Pot Smokers Handbook, featuring 420 things to do when you're stoned. Since 1974, High Times Magazine has covered marijuana in all its aspects and wonders, from cultivation to legalization to the herb's enduring and exalted place in popular culture. Packed with inside information, the official High Times Pot Smokers Handbook wove all of this collected wisdom together into a single indispensable ganja guide, including an entertaining look at marijuana's history, profiles of herb-friendly travel destinations and festivals, favorite potluck recipes from the High Times staff, smoking skills, advocacy and activism, essential marijuana movies and songs, profiles of famous cannabis strains, comprehensive growing information, celebrity endorsements, and much more. This is truly, finally, the ultimate guide to green living.
No one expects a Spanish Inquisition!
You have a chance to sit next to President Obama now. Do you want to ask him about the ways you think the United States could help your country in the drug war?
Chris, ¿no tiene una pregunta un poco más fácil?
Don't you have a simpler question?
How can we improve North-South relations, generally speaking?
We have the obligation to see if we're doing the best that we can do, or if there are other alternatives that can be much more efficient. On one side, it can be to put all the consumers go to jail. The other extreme is legalization. On the middle ground, we may have more practical policies.
I think it is entirely legitimate to have a conversation about whether the laws in place are ones that are doing more harm than good in certain places. I personally, and my administration's position, is that legalization is not the answer. That, in fact, if you think about how it would end up operating, the capacity of a large-scale drug trade to dominate certain countries if they were allowed to operate legally without any constraint could be just as corrupting, if not more corrupting, than the status quo.
You want answers?
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
You want answers?
You have offended my family?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
And you have offended Shaolin Temple.
You can't handle the truth!
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
All right, welcome back, everybody. We are going to talk a little bit here about the, got to fix this camera angle. So sorry about that. Wow, a little bit distracted here in the studio, but there we go. Back on the Radical Rant interview here. We have got a story up on the Normal blog right now that's written by one of our legal interns, Kellen Russianello, and it talks about a recent Supreme Court ruling that I thought was very important for everyone in the cannabis community to be aware of. And so I'd just like to read from Kellen's review here. Basically, the Supreme Court has authorized strip searches for any criminal offense. Anything. Anything that the cops can arrest you for, you could be subject to a strip search. Now, that has been the case for many people in many states already. However, it has now been codified into precedent by the Supreme Court. So now the floodgates are open. The cops all around can strip search you if they are going to take you to jail. Let me go to Kellen's review on this. In Florence v. Board of Chosen Freeholders, a 5-4 decision drawn on party lines released on April 2nd, the Supreme Court upheld the practice of forcing detainees who would be entering the general jail population to undergo strip searches. The court noted that they, quote, must defer to the judgment of correctional officials unless the record contains substantial evidence showing their policies are an unnecessary or unjustified response to the problems of jail security, end quote. Despite the dissent's assertions that the massive affront to human dignity that strip searches cause is not outweighed by the scant evidence that these procedures actually produce discovery of more contraband, the court ruled that jails can force detainees to undergo an extremely close inspection while unclothed. The rationale for the decision is that correction officers should have the deference to deal with the serious problems faced by admitted new people to the general jail population. These dangers include introducing contagious diseases or lice, the possibility that the detainee may have open wounds, the fact that a detainee may have gang tattoos, which could lead to violence within the jail, or the chance that the person may be carrying contraband, weapons, or drugs in places that are not visible from a general visual search. Additionally, jails are often more dangerous than prisons because little is known about the admitted offender. All right, so you take this rationale on its face, and I know a lot of people out there, good law-abiding citizens out there, might come to a conclusion. Well, they're criminals. Got busted and put in jail. Got criminals are going to jail, and, by God, they deserve what's coming to them. They don't deserve to be treated or patted on the back or given a light, nice, cushy lifestyle. You know, if we're going to do a strip search, that's got to be what's got to happen. We can't let them take guns or drugs into the jail cells, despite the fact that they still are able to. But regardless, the problem with this kind of reasoning is that people that are going to jail are still innocent until proven guilty, right? They can be arrested and detained and put into a jail population while away, if they can't bail out, if they're poor, and in many cases, they can be innocent. They can be found innocent and yet still subjected to the strip search while they were in the jail. And the case itself is a pretty shocking example of the extreme that I'm talking about here, of someone who you would think would be the last person you'd need to strip search to send to jail. The case arose from the 2005 arrest of Albert Florence, a middle-aged African-American man. Surprise. When Florence's wife was pulled over for speeding, so this guy wasn't even driving, folks. Florence's wife was pulled over for speeding. A record search revealed that Florence, who was in the passenger seat, the man in the passenger seat, had an outstanding warrant for failure to appear at an enforcement hearing as a result of unpaid fines from 2 years prior. Okay? So the guy sitting in the driver's seat has unpaid fines and gets the arrest warrant, so he gets arrested. Now, in fact, the fine had been paid a few days after the issuance of the warrant, but the warrant was never taken off the system. So this Florence, Albert Florence, is arrested on a warrant that is really just a paperwork error, electronic error, let's say, of one clerk failing to take the warrant off the system when the other clerk entered that the fines had been paid. All right, so there's your setup, right? Warrant for the guy, doesn't even belong on the system, wasn't even driving, wasn't even doing anything, minding his own business. Now, additionally, this is where it really will boil your blood. Albert Florence was no dummy. Albert Florence realized, oh, shit, I am an African-American man with a warrant out. I better do something about that because, you know, sometimes we get pulled over for driving while brown. So, anticipating that there was going to be some sort of problem with the fact that he finds out that he's got a warrant out for him and 2 days later pays it, right? This is, what was it, 2 days prior? Right. So, not only does he realize that there might be some problem with this, he goes to the due diligence, if you will, of getting photocopies of his receipts that he paid off the fine and kept them with him to prove, just in case if, you know, I get pulled over for driving while brown, I got my photocopies here. I got my papers to show, no, officer, I really did pay the fine. To no avail, he was arrested on the spot, which is bound to happen because the cop, you know, they don't know if it's a forgery. You know, people can do things with Photoshop. The law says there's a warrant there. I follow the law. I arrest the guy. All right, so Florence is arrested despite the fact he did everything he could to prove that he was being a law-abiding citizen. Albert Florence was held for 6 days in the Burlington County Jail and then transferred to the Essex County Jail, where he was held for an additional day. At each facility, so twice at least, detention officers forced Albert Florence to strip naked while they examined him for tattoos, scars, and contraband. In the second jail, Albert Florence had to lift his genitals, turn around, squat, and then cough. After his release, Albert Florence sued the government under Title 42 U.S.C. 1983 for violating his Fourth and Fourteenth Amendment rights. The Supreme Court, in their 5-4 decision, based on party lines, built their ruling on the precedent that was set in a case called Bell v. Wolfish, which ruled that prisoners that were detained in any correctional facility could be forced to undergo a strip search after every contact with a visit or a person from outside the facility. The court also cites Atwater v. City of Lago Vista that held that a person can be arrested and held in detention no matter how minor the criminal offense. In the Lago Vista case, the woman was arrested for not wearing a seatbelt. Taken together, this means that a person can be detained for any criminal offense and therefore forced to undergo a strip search for any criminal offense. Now, Justice Breyer, in the dissent, points out the absurdity of this approach. Under this ruling, minor offenses such as driving with a noisy muffler, failing to use a turn signal, riding around on a bicycle without an audible bell, or walking your dog without a leash could subject the arrestee to a strip search. Or, say, having a fleck of marijuana on your sweater that you failed to brush off. Or a roach that you forgot or fell in the side panel of your car that gets found in a search. Whatever. Get ready to be strip searched. Breyer also notes that other procedures used by jails, including the jails in which Albert Florence was detained, have not shown to be any less effective in finding contraband, gang tattoos, or removing lice than the strip search procedure. For example, both jails performed pat-down searches, made detainees go through metal detectors, made inmates shower with delousing shampoo, and searched the inmates' clothing. Furthermore, a New York Times article summarizes the trend that states have taken so far regarding strip searches for the newly admitted persons to jails. Now, the procedures that the majority of the Supreme Court just endorsed are forbidden by statute in at least 10 states and at odds with the policies of federal authorities. And, according to a supporting brief filed by the American Bar Association, international human rights treaties also ban these procedures. Monday's decision endorsed a recent trend from appeals courts in Atlanta, San Francisco, and Philadelphia, allowing strip searches of anyone and everyone admitted to a jail's general population. At least 7 other appeals courts, on the other hand, had ruled that such searches were proper only if there was a reasonable suspicion that the arrested person had contraband. Like, maybe a middle-aged African-American man sitting in a family van getting pulled over who has a photocopy of the receipts that he paid for the fines for... We really think this guy is smuggling C4 plastic explosives up his ass? It's all part of my secret plan. I'll have my wife drive slightly fast over the speed limit, and when we get pulled over, this C4 smuggled in my ass can blow up the prison. This is not the America I was raised to believe in. This decision by the Supreme Court just is another brick in the wall of walling us off from our very Constitution, our very civil liberties, what it really even means to be an American. I can't believe sometimes that we're treating ourselves this way, that we're allowing this to happen in our country. I hope you'll join us in hour two. We'll talk more about it on Toker Talk Radio. That's all the time we got for Normal Show Live. Thanks for joining us. No show tomorrow. I'm in the air flying to San Antonio. But join us on 420 starting 1 o'clock Pacific all day long for coverage from 420 all across the country and from the San Antonio Freedom Fest. Chief Greenbelt will be there. I'll be there at a good time. For Brian the Red and Wiz Calico and Cannabis Carry, I'm Radical Russ. Thanks for joining us. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers, and happy 420 to you.
This is Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation. You're listening to the Normal Network.